हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So continue Kriya Sardipika on the introduction to the in the Samskardipika, which is the right word, taking sannyas. So then the acharyas made the point about quoting from Gita, the Apichek Sudara Acharo. So then here is that a person, he's translated as a person of the lowest conduct who takes to my worship must be considered saintly. He is situated, right? So here the key thing is he's rightly situated because he's taken to Krishna's worship. That's the rightly situated. Now, if you want to improve the quality of that situation, then you have to give up that lowest conduct. But it's not that only if the conduct is good, then you can take to the worship. No, you can take to the worship even if the conduct hasn't been good. Because you see, Stalin first joins Krishna consciousness, the conduct hasn't really changed, right? So therefore, then you have to, you see is that, but he's that he's having some faith, he's taking it up, he's starting to associate with the devotees. Then that brings about the point of that, then they're rightly situated, right? Now, when you're rightly situated, then you have to apply it properly. Just like, let's say you want to do arti for the deities. So if you have all the paraphernalia, you have the asan, it's put in that plate, you know, the things are put on the table in the, you know, the deity's right-hand corner, you're standing there, and how you say, you know, then you can say you're rightly situated. But that doesn't mean, and so, now, the point is now you have to make it happen, right? You have to open the pearl of conch, open the curtains, apply yourself and do your best at offering. So even if you, while you're thinking of making the offering, you're thinking about something else, but you're rightly situated because you're doing the worship. And now you can improve the quality of that. You know, just like it, in the previous point that he made about a brahmana. Then in definition here it says a brahmana is respected as the very body of the Lord because he practices sadharma, right? So sadharma means he's connected with Brahman. He's connected with the transcendental position or the spiritual position. However, when he can give up the material identification of his position as a brahmana and practices sadharma, he's called a Vaishnava, right? So he's practicing sadharma, but he's still identifying with his material position as a brahmana. But it's still sadharma mixed with that. Now, when you give up that, then he takes the position of Vaishnava, right? Because then the Vaishnava is then, you know, so that makes a difference. As one is the body of the Lord, and that's the brahmana, but then the Vaishnava is the soul, right, of the Lord. Then when you, in just, in other words, the steps, so just like here, sannyas, one who gives up the marking of varna becomes a sannyasi, right? So that of the brahmana, the markings of the brahmana and everything like that, that identifies him as brahmana, yes, the status of the brahmana, he gives that up, right? Then you know, he becomes a sannyasi, right? But then when he gives up the markings of ashrama, you know, like the, you know, all the different things that he's identified in the hierarchy there, then he becomes an avadhuta, right? So there are levels. There's always going to be levels. So we have to understand it's not this black and white, you know, unless he's squeaky clean, then only he can be a devotee. And if there's any flaw, he can't be a devotee. If that was the case, then who's a devotee? Because technically speaking, if you really get into it, the neophyte devotee is called a neophyte. You know, that's the nice name we give, or the third class devotee and all that. That's good. But the technical term is prakriti bhakta, means he's materialistic. So devotion. If you're talking about the aspect of pure devotional service and faith in pure devotional service and the practice of it, then he's not a devotee. And if you look at it very seriously, then it's only when you come to prema you can claim to be a devotee. But they won't claim to be a devotee. You know, so then the Uttam Bhakti, who's on the transcendental platform, and that but hasn't fully come to the point of prema, right? He's on the platform of bhavan, ecstasy. He's a pure devotee, but he hasn't come to the point of prema. So he's not actually the pure unalloyed devotee. So we wouldn't consider that that's the top position, right? But then as a Madhyama, he has faith in that and conviction in that, while the neophyte doesn't. They get distracted by this and that and require this and that and say this, unless this and that is there, it won't come. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, the Acharyas point out, is that if that's why the Madhyama, he's compassionate to the innocent. Because otherwise the neophyte wouldn't get association because you're friends with equals. So if you're a Madhyama, unless someone's a Madhyama, you wouldn't be friendly. You wouldn't have that friendship rasa. And then someone who's an Uttama, then you're going, or senior within the Madhyama platform, you're going to have respect for. But you're going to be compassionate to those who are innocent, the junior. So that will mean neophyte devotees and karmis who aren't acting against the devotional principles or against God when you talk about it, right? If they're atheistic and completely against, then you don't waste your time. So the neophyte devotees are the top of, the innocent, just as within friendship, those who are above, in the Madhyama, those who are above are going to be the ones who have, ruchi or asakti, they're going to be above those with just nishtha. So one has appreciates that there's steps. And why are there steps? Because it's about the mix. What's mixed with it? It becomes pure, right? So then pure devotional service means there's no mix, right? And so then that's then what we're looking for. And, if there's still an understanding appreciation of just the Praman and Paramatma features, and that still has a prominence, or, it plays an important role, then it hasn't come to pure unalloyed devotion. When you give up, it's only about Bhagavan, only about his desire, that's all that matters. Then that comes to the point of pure unalloyed devotion. Right? So these things are given just to give a context, because Baladeva Vidyabhushan, his point is if you're in pursuance of pure devotional service, it's counted as pure devotional service. It means you know yourself that you're not on that platform, but in your conduct of dealing with other devotees, you deal as, that they're all devotees. That's the whole point, because that's the essential point is one who takes to my worship, Krishna says, that's the essential point. They're considered saintly. So therefore, anyone, even the new bhakta, is considered saintly because of that. Right? So then that brings in the next, even sinful persons, women, Vaishyas, and Shudras. If they take shelter of me, go to the supreme abode. So that means anybody, whatever their position, if they take shelter of the Lord, then they're going to go to his abode. That doesn't mean right that nanosecond. It means he's on the path to go to the abode. And if he stays on that, then he'll get there. Yes, Pandavji.
Maharaj, so I just remember that in Madhurya Kadambini there was a differentiation between two types of devotees. One is on the level of nishtha, in the sense that he always performs devotional service, he's steadily established, but he sometimes doesn't have like perfect behavior. Sometimes he get a little angry or grumpy or whatever. And there is another type of devotee who is always manifesting very good behavior consistently, but he's not steadily engaged in bhakti. So in between these two, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that the one who is always engaged in bhakti is actually on the level of nishtha, although he doesn't maybe always manifest perfect Vaishnava qualities yet. So I just wanted to mention that it is very interesting, this in connection with what you are explaining, what is the most important?
Yes, because they always have to take it that it's descending, so it's always from this point of worshiping Krishna. See, the problem with this verse, this Abhichet Sudaracharo, it's one of those verses everybody knows, and it's either used as, oh, no, that, you're just using that. That's not what it means. Or they're using it to get out of that I'm not in a good position. Because they're taking it that a person of the lowest conduct is the essential point here. So one is saying, even you have that, that you're still a devotee. The other one's saying, no, but if you have that, how can you be a devotee? But the point, that's not Krishna's point. Krishna's point is that he who takes to my worship must be considered. So if you're taking to the worship, then you can going to have that progression that's there. You're going to have various stages. So that's what's to be seen. Because in here, the point that defines the means always engaged, because they see that devotional service is what's going on. So everything's connected. They have the faith that if you're doing devotional service, everything else, can be connected to Krishna. It's not that other things make it so that you're doing devotional service, right? It means if I'm doing devotional service, all other activities are included. So in devotional service, I can engage my conditioned nature in Krishna service, but it's not by engaging my conditioned nature perfectly in pious activities. It means that it's devotion. No, it's the other way around. It's because you're doing things in devotion. Therefore, the conditioned nature becomes connected. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just like, it would be, it may get the point across. I want to make some toast, right? So there's a toaster. So if I'm actually making toast, the toaster is plugged in. But if you put the emphasis on the toaster being plugged in, it doesn't mean it's making toast. You go into any kitchen, the toaster's generally always plugged in, right? But it's not making toast. So it's only if you're making toast,
yes,
that the being plugged in has any meaning. Otherwise, if I'm not making toast, whether it's plugged in or not, it doesn't matter. Does that make any sense?
Yes, Maharaj, yes.
Right, and so naturally, so it's a bit of a faulty example, but the point being is that it's that the power comes from that the reason I'm doing something is because I'm making toast. I'm not doing something because there's electricity.
Maharaj, it's similar,
right?
To
I want.
Yes, sorry. Sorry, Maharaj. It's similar to one analogy from, I think, from Rupa Goswami. He says that when you wanna cook something, you use firewood, and then something gets cooked on the firewood, and then you offer it to Krishna on the fire. So the idea is not just to burn the firewood. The goal is to cook something. In the same way, he says.
Yes.
Devotional service performed destroys all sinful reactions. But that's not the goal of it. The goal is to please Krishna. So it's something similar to this analogy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a better... No, but I'm saying that's a better analogy, because here is that the fire, the wood and the fire, then, take on a better quality. And so, and then the cooking. Because you can cook not for Krishna, or you can cook for Krishna. And so in here is that then the point also by the cooking process, which then you're thinking, meaning that the wood is the material activity. The wood becomes destroyed by the process of cooking. So with the wood, there's fire and there's cooking, but in that process, the wood becomes destroyed. So at the end, you just have what's been cooked. Yeah, that's a better example. Yeah. So the point is this, it's a matter of how do you approach the verse? Is it inductive or is it deductive? So because we want to say, no, he is a bad conduct, so he can't be a devotee. But we're taking it from our position. But it's coming from Krishna. Because the soul is supposed to be engaged in Krishna's service. The nature of the soul is transcendental. That's his position of that, of service. And to be functioning on the spiritual platform in relationship to Krishna. But the soul in the material world, the conditioned state, is not. So if he starts, then that's considered good. You know, it's just like, let's say the person decides to learn music. So when he goes to the school, or driving school, when he goes to the school, he doesn't know driving or doesn't know music, but by being there, is that so? Once one is in the college, then one can say, yes, he's rightly situated, right? And so then he may have bad habits in the music or in the driving or whatever it is they're learning, but by being there and associating and taking the instructions of the who's teaching seriously and practicing that with attention and, you know, with knowledge, then they're going to improve and all the bad qualities will go away. But unless they're in the school, how do they learn? So you're always going to have the point is that it based on that. So when I say, oh, but he's not qualified, how can he get into the school? But the school looks at it, no, unless he's in the school, how does he, that's his first qualification. He's rightly situated. Krishna doesn't say he takes my worship must be considered saintly and stops there. He says he is rightly situated. Then from situation, which is the field, then he must act according to what is the actual, you know, goal and standard of the goal. So then he must improve his knowledge, he must improve his character, he must improve his experience in the field by that practice. Then it gets better. But what's most important is that he sees that its relationship to Krishna, how it connects to Krishna, that makes it what's proper. That makes it perfect. So if that's there, then everything else will work. And if that's not there, then it won't work so good. Does that make sense? Then it just stays on the material platform. It's nice. It's mundane. So without that third thing of the prayojana, that's about pleasing Krishna, this whatever field you have and whatever qualifications and endeavor you make, it still will never become perfect because pious is never perfect. Because it's just a matter of time before piety turns into impiety, right? You let's say you see someone who is not wealthy, but he's making his effort nicely, you know, proper effort, and he has good character, you know, in making money. Then you see he, you know, with time, he starts to make money, right? Now, then you see a person who has money and who has good character, deals with the money properly, deals with others properly, doesn't try to, you know, make such a position of how, because of the wealth, he's maintaining that piety and maintaining that wealth, thus the wealth. Then you have the persons who are wealthy, but they have an attitude, they think, they don't respect money. They don't deal properly. So then what happens is they start to lose that position of having the money. Right? So the point is it's the attitude of that, of what it's for. Because the one sees that money is a thing on its own. It's not mine. You know, the one doesn't have and wants to gain. The other has and is maintaining because he says it's not mine. The third one, he thinks it's mine. you know. So that's why the thing is, you know, that if you, oh yes, you know, I'll have money, it's mine, I'm a wealthy person, I'm, you know, doing so nicely socially and all that. That's just to get you to have the confidence to focus. But that mentality, how will you maintain? Because then you think, I worked, I got it, it's mine. Well, it's no, it's still never yours. You're just holding it. It's just like these really, really wealthy families. Then they consider what they have an actual wealth. It's not theirs. They're the caretaker now. Like they have a huge, let's say, you know, mansion and land. It's not theirs. They're holding it now. They're controlling it, but it will be handed over to their son if he's qualified. You know, or that ad for, what is that, Philippe Patek watch. You never own a Philippe Patek. You just take care of it for the next generation. They're trying to, you know, show how good the watch is that'll last for generations, right? You know, like you see these old, old antique watches that are well made. You know, they could be a few hundred years old. They still work today. So it's not yours, because if it is, where is he? He's gone, you know. But the watch is still here. So that's the fine point, is that it's about you have to have the aspect of appreciating Bhagavan, and that it's his mentality. Yes, everything is Krishna. And on the, you know, as Brahman level, and on the Paramatma level, he is God, controls everything, has entered everything and pervades everything and controls everything. But the point is why is he doing that? Because of his own desire. That's why then the chapter Shloki, the third verse, is that what's beyond. He's beyond, right? Because you have everything and you have the control of everything, but beyond that is the person. That's what's important. So if you appreciate the Bhagavan platform, then you actually get to the point of individuality, right? Or it's just an identity. So it means identity is necessary. You can't function without identity, but it should be functioning on the, but your application of it should be functioning on the platform individuality. Because otherwise, it's taking here, who worships must be considered saintly, right? He's rightly situated. So now the point is do you see him, if we see him simply by identity? No, saintly person as an identity is this, or a person of the lowest conduct is this, you know, or rightly situated, it's by this identity. So they're all looking at it as identities. But the point is there an individual in that, within that identity? That's the weakness of the neophyte. Neophytes generally can only see identity. They don't see individuality other than their own. Therefore, everybody else's an identity is supposed to facilitate their individuality. And they don't really see the importance of their identity, because it's up for discussion. We're not fanatic, you know, we chant, we're not fanatic and all that, but everybody else, it's like, this is the weakness. It still is tinged with the impersonal, because Brahman and Paramatma, even Paramatma, though he's a person, it's still a personal aspect that you're not seeing. Well, what is he as an individual? What is his desire? I mean, he's God and controls everything because he's God. It's just his nature. You know, so the sat and cheat. So it's not until you get to Ananda, then you get to the individuality, right? And so therefore, when in reality, when you're dealing with individuality on the platform of Anandamaya, then you're dealing with the actual transcendental position, right? That's real individuality. And then the individuality of applying your position in, you know, a dharma, artha, karma, and moksha, it's still, even though it's the platform of the senses or prosperity or religion or spirituality, it's still a matter of identity, right? And that identity doesn't actually take on the full personal thing, because you don't really know who you are until you understand your position in a relationship, eternal relationship with Krishna, because all other things are temporary. Those are simply only identities. So that's where it flips, is that the conditioned identity or this transcendental identity, because the transcendental identity means within that you're the individual. Like identity, one's a Brajbasi, but within that, then one's in this particular, you know, group, or within that group, then you're an individual within that. Right? Does that make sense? So you always have a pastime is going on, and you have what you do, but who are you within that? So there's always going to be these two. So that's the whole thing. The identity is working with the field, with the situation, with what is to be done, what can be done. The individuality is why you're doing it, because it's based on Icha, right? Icha, Kriya, and Jnana. So Krishna's desire, then Kriya, then every action is done to fulfill that in a field, right? So he wants something. So that means something that is wanted means that it would be manifest in a particular field. How do you connect the two? Through action, through Kriya. So therefore, then the Paramatma aspect is when you apply the rules to the field, then you'll get a result. But if it's about Bhagavan pleasing him, then the results will be transcendental. If they're not about him, then they will be on the platform of a sensuality, a profit, religion, or spirituality. Right? It's very clear cut. Because the point is Icha is the primary. Kriya and Jnana are the secondary. They support the Icha. So Krishna's desire is always transcendental, so it'll always be in that function. But we, if we see it in relation to Krishna, it will be transcendental. And if we don't see it in relationship to Krishna, then it's separated from the Bhagavan or the personal aspects. So then we just see the mechanics of there, you know, of the field and what you can do in that field. And so then we want to gain the profits from that. And so we only see that much of it. So that's why we see the lowest conduct. And so then we see piety, and that's all the maximum you can get with the Kriya and Jnana aspects in the material world, because the Icha is our desire, and we're not the lords of Kriya and Jnana. So therefore, then through the Lord, you know, the Sarup Shakti, then through the modes of nature, then manipulates all this mechanics that are there, the field and the actions, to get the results that we're looking for, according to our karma, our previous work. And so it's very different. Mechanically, it's the same. You look at it, but mechanics is secondary. So if you only have mechanics, then it's not connected to Krishna. So the point is, the original is the person, and the mechanics are all together. The desire. So it's without. So that's the point problem that comes up, is that we're Satchitananda, we'll always think things would function according to Satchitananda. And they do, but it's just in its original state or in its reflected state. And so in that reflected state, therefore, then we can't gain what we're looking for, you know, which is happiness. Because you can only, happiness is coming from Ananda, which means this relationship to Krishna. Removing the pain that I feel, that's something, yeah, that makes a favorable situation. But that only makes a situation in which then, you know, have no obstacles to do something. But you can't say that itself is happiness. You know, I mean, each platform has something. The field's organized. You know, it gives a particular amount of happiness that you've done the work nicely and all that. It gives a certain amount of, you know, could say satisfaction. But it's only if it's in relationship to Krishna that you can actually get actual happiness. Right? So that's the thing, is people in the material world, because we are Satchitananda, if there's nothing available, you get adjusted to that, right? You know, if there's no food, all there is, let's say, you know, whole grains and some water, and all you can do is chew them in your teeth, you get used to that, you know? And so grains that are a little softer, a little sweeter, are considered higher grade, and those that are not are considered lower grade, you know? And we might soak them in water if they're too hard, and, you know, like that. So we'll adjust. And then, you know, the whole world goes on like that. And so then in this in this particular valley, in this particular region, then they grow the, you know, the sweetest and softest, you know, grain. And so therefore, then it's the most valuable. Everybody is trying to get that. You know, you have fancy, you know, places that just sell that, and all people that go there are the best and everything like that. But it's just still the thing. It's not up to the standard of human food. You know, you get adjusted to that. So what's going on here in the material world, we get adjusted that simply I got the facility I wanted, or I was able to organize the facility and get a transformation the way I wanted, and so I find some happiness in that. You know, it's just like, have you ever, sometimes you have electronic equipment when it's plugged in, you know, sometimes like, you know, speakers or some household equipment. It doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes you have it where if you kind of run your hand or finger over it, then if you just touch it, there's nothing. But if you move your hand over it, you can feel a little bit of the electrical kind of vibration that's in there. It gives a little bit of a sensation in your hand, very slight, right? So that is the, but it's not actually the experience of electricity. So that's how much we're getting out of the activities we do. It's hardly anything. It's just because such Chidananda are all connected, there's going to be some little bit of that in there, but that's not what you'd call enough to be actually satisfying to the soul. That's all you get. So you even you have the biggest, fanciest place, you know, spent, you know, millions or billions on it, still they're not happy, right? The man said, of, oh, I had this one nice house, I'd be happy. Once he has the house and he has the facility, then he'll have another one. How many really rich people only have one place? So these guys have the biggest, they're still not satisfied. They're saying, oh, if I had this, then I'd be satisfied. I have a, you know, 70-foot yacht, and, you know, I'll be satisfied. When they get the 70-foot, then they want the 150-foot. They want to get that. They want the 250-foot. They want to get that. They want the 400-foot one. They're never satisfied. You know, one for going out on the ocean, one for just around the bay and friends, one for, you know, doing this, and one for parties, and one like that. You know, there's once a story of, I think it was, one, you know, I'm not sure if, what he was, if he, you know, some variety of shape, you know, he had this, you know, whatever it was, and I think he was in charge of the country. And he had made this rule in this one marina, only his boats could be there, no other boats, you know, and so the military had to remove any other boat that came there. So then one time he's coming into that marina, back from where he was traveling, into there, and he sees this other huge boat, I mean, impressive boat there. And he's so annoyed. So he calls up the head of the security. Why, you know, what's this nonsense? You're fired and all that. Why this boat is there? You didn't get it out and this and that, and going on and on and on and on, you know, and yelling and screaming. And then finally it comes out that it was his boat. It's just he's got so many, he forgot it was his boat. So that's the whole point, is it's an illusion to think someone will be happy by, unless it's connected to Krishna, because that's the primary. But conditioned state means we get used to the secondary is all there is, and the primary is my desire. So we replace Krishna's desire, which is the actual primary, with my desire, and say that that's primary. That's why people, as things devolve and get lower and lower, down to, you know, basically animal life, it's all about my feeling, what I feel. That's the authority. That's all that takes. That's what sanctions it. And everything else is secondary to that. And you see, and people act like that. They're like animals. And so the other animals, one group of animals can relate to each other. And so they can relate to each other. It doesn't mean they don't over something, you know, something to eat there, and there's not enough for everybody, then they'll fight over it because it's about them. So it's animal society. So that's why to elevate then human society, pranamoy, at least you got to think about the bigger group and everybody getting it, everybody sharing and all that nice kind of stuff. But still, it's non-theistic because it's about you, not about, you know, you made up the rule that if we get this, we'll be happy. While theistic means what's the law of nature? What is the natural needs of a human being? Right? So then you have to fall in line with that. And within that, you can pick and choose what you want, but you know, it's within a range. But then when you see the soul, then you take on the spiritual platform. And then when you see it's related to Krishna, his desire, that is then, that becomes the transcendental. So for the devotees, they situate themselves in the beginning on that platform. And as they preach on that platform of Vijnana Maya, so on the spiritual platform. And from there, they try for the transcendental because we don't have that love for Krishna. We're developing it. So we practice that. Then it moves forward. Like that. Then it moves forward. Does that make sense? You know, so they use that, but they know it's not the idea, you know, one comes to that transcendental and one only situates oneself there so that others can function and gradually come to the spiritual platform. But that spiritual is only the field. It's only the right situation. So being there on that and then trying to do everything in connection with Krishna, then you're actually rightly situated because now you have a foot in the door of the transcendental. You know, so the material, spiritual platform of liberation is still not actually that good. For us, for the materialists, it's great, but for us, it's not. So this differentiation that it starts with Krishna, if it's not connected to Krishna, it doesn't matter how good or pious or anything it is, it doesn't matter. It really just doesn't matter. Like that. So then, therefore, even sinful persons, women, Vaishyas, and Shudras, all these four groups, if they take shelter of Krishna, they can go to the supreme abode. Right? So that's the whole idea. And what is going on here? Sinful person, they see things centered around themselves. Women see them around themselves. Vaishya Shudras, all around themselves, their benefits. They're not seeing it. What is, you know, beyond that so that they can start to extend that. So you can see is that in family life and in community, you have to start to extend it to others. Right? And you see in the modern, they're very much trying to get rid of this community based on religious principles and family based on religious principles that can elevate the consciousness. They're taking it. No, it has to be on the group, on the governance. But the government is the authority, not family, not religion. You know, so it brings it down to that atheistic. So that way then it doesn't elevate the consciousness. Then staying as animals, then it's easier to control animals, right? Means if you went into the barn, you want to herd all the cows out, you know, into the field, that they act like cows, you know, like animals and all that, then it works. You know, you come with the stick, you know, you either call them and they're in the mood, so they come, or you use the stick and show that and they'll get out. And if not, you give somebody a whack and then they all start to move. You can herd them around. Now, what happens if you walk in there and the cow starts talking to you, you know? What happens if the cow then says, you know, why? Why do we have to go outside? It's fine in here. Now you have a problem. Right? And I'll give you a whack. Yeah, so I mean, right? You should look at it. Who are you? You know, it's like that. I'm 10 times bigger than you. So, you know, if it comes down to you and me, then, you know, you have problems. Well, if they just act like animals, there's no problem. So that's why you see in these atheistic governments, then they are secular governments. If they're not careful about the individuality and all that, they will come to this point where it's just government control over the living entities because and they have to have the identity is that they are the animals. You know, so individuality doesn't count. You know, just whatever little bit is there in the animals, it's all right. But that's all that is. And in some situations, they say they even get rid of that. You know, everyone wears the same clothes, eats the same food, does the same thing, and then you know, like that. So these are just the natural directions that the world goes. If you take it too far one direction or the other, off the middle, then that's where this problem starts. So you always have to see is that when it's connected to Krishna, that's the only way. I mean, connected means he is a person. How does he want it done? not as connected to Krishna, that it's the, means, yes, you see, it's okay. The sun is Krishna, the ocean is Krishna, so therefore if we bathe in the ocean or play in the ocean, we're playing it with Krishna and all that. That purifies, that will uplift. You know, and so it's a nice situation in which you want to have some recreation, you do that in relation to Krishna. But the point is then how do you recreate within that? You know, do we go down there and start fishing? You know? Or do you go down to the beach and kick out everybody because, you know, it's my beach. When I'm here, it's mine. You know, there's the half of the living entities. That has to be the basis. You can't just say that it's for Krishna, it's for that, or for the institution, and that's all that matters. No, because the institution, it's about getting to the individual. So if you can't apply it to the individual, that works for the individual to elevate them back to Krishna, then it's a failure. Right? So here, that's the point. He's rightly situated. I mean, situated. Now he can improve the quality of his conduct, quality of his worship. You know, in other words, the saintliness can be improved by, you know, improving the quality of conduct. You know, it means, well, it goes the other way around. You improve your worship, the quality of conduct improves. Because otherwise, you're conditioning. How are you going to change that? You can over hundreds, thousands of lifetimes, but yeah, it's such a slow path. Why would we waste that time? So in other words, by improving the quality of worship, you improve the quality of the conduct. So if there's a weakness in conduct, it means you need to increase the quality of the worship or the opportunity to do that. That makes sense? So then that's the whole point. Then if you're engaged in the sinful activities, Shudras engage their nature in Krishna service, Vaishyas their nature in Krishna service, women their nature in Krishna service, sinful persons their nature in Krishna service. You know, and this is not that, oh, well, you're just catching that those groups. You know, and like that. But no, but when it's in Kali Yuga, as we saw before in the samskars, if you haven't done the samskars and all that, you're a Shudra. Doesn't matter what your background is, what your family lineage is, you're a Shudra. So basically, when you say even sinful persons, women, Vaishyas, and Shudras, these four, they take shelter of me. You're counting everybody in the world. And then because of devotional service, then you may be able to act in a platform that's higher and all that because of the devotional service. And then he gives here, the example of this is Vidura, who, though considered a Shudra by his birth, entered the Avadhuta ashram. Right? And then here's the verse, Bhagavatam 3:31-7. The outcast who chants your name is most exalted. He has performed all austerities, all sacrifices, and studied all the Vedas, right? Because that point is that within the name, it's all yajna, all austerity, all Vedas, everything's within the name. So the point is, as someone who's stable and steady in that, then all these are gained. That's actually the platform of Nishtha. If you think, no, but, you know, it's not actually, but it's just, oh, and all these excuses, whatever social, political, economic, judicial kind of elements that you want to complain about, that means you don't have faith in the name to that point where it brings you to functioning on the Nishtha platform. Right? It means technically, if you take a second initiation, you're supposed to be on the platform of Nishtha, but you still have to act on that. You still have to take advantage of the position. Right, just because you put someone in the kitchen doesn't mean that they're going to cook. They actually have to take advantage of that position of cooking. Does that make sense? They have to take advantage. If they don't, then no cooking will happen. Just because they're in the kitchen doesn't mean anything will happen. So just because they're situated there because of the initiation, they still have to take advantage of. They still have to apply. But what are they applying? Devotional service, not piety. So then the last point is then from Padma Purana. The sum and, this is the smart of Yah Satatam Vishnur. The sum and substance of all rules and regulations is to always remember and never forget Krishna. Right? So that's the whole point is that it's about always remember Krishna and never forget him, right? So the primary is always remember him, never forget him. Don't put yourself in situations that allow you to forget. So those situations that are that, those are the ones you avoid. And the ones that make you remember, that's the ones you always are engaged in. So that's the whole point. We can't put it on the negative. It's not that the negative is thing is there, it's the positive. But here you see even the negative is connected to Krishna. That way the primary and the secondary become connected. Is that good? Yes, no, very good. Yeah, okay. Here one should understand the intention of scripture. One may take, good, okay. External meaning, Varnashrama, or the internal meaning, Krishna Bhakti, right? So both of those are there. So you can say is they both have the direct, but the actual direct, because you have to apply it, is going to be Krishna Bhakti. So Abhideya is not just the knowledge and the action that's done, but actually, you know, understanding actually what it's for. So Krishna Bhakti is what it's for. Everything, every Vedic verse, every shloka is about Krishna Bhakti. It just may be talking about some particular detail in a particular field of Vedic literature, but it's all about how that can be engaged in bhakti, because other verses then give that direction, right? So this point of that, the direct meaning will mean, as it said, like in this case of the Varnashram, but being engaged in Krishna's service. So it's the engagement in Krishna's service makes the Varnashram perfect. So then brings them to that platform of saintly position. Those who are incapable of anything else must follow the external rules of Varnashram, including charity, vrata, home, etc. And gradually they attain the qualification for taking the internal meaning and following the path of bhakti. Right? But that's in the association. It's not that those pious activities themselves, because it's not piety that brings you to bhakti, it's like jnana sukriti. So if they keep doing all these nice things and associating with devotees, then they'll eventually come there. And even if they don't, by associating with devotees, then that's actually going to give them the credit that they can do that. But then the point is all these pious activities are the ones that the devotees do, but in relation to Krishna, not in relation to karma yajna. They're not doing charity, vrata, and homa to get the benefits of material sense gratification, dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. They're doing simply because that's the human lifestyle that Krishna has given for the devotees. At that time, the necessity of following all the external rules decreases, right? Because then you go from Varnashram to Daiva Varnashram. In other words, devotees can follow Daiva Varnashram because they've taken shelter. But those who have not actually have to follow Varnashram. And that says anyone. This whole idea is, oh, but they're not devotees, so they don't have to follow the Varnashram. No, they have to follow. The karmis aren't following Varnashram and their duties. They're all getting sinful reaction for that. And then for the devotee, because he's serving Krishna, he simply follows Daiva Varnashram. So enough to make a structure in which devotees can interact with each other, you know, and have all the variety of relationships and, you know, who does what and all these different things. That's what it's for. It's only that much. How much creates a structure enough to make it work, because everybody is involved, you know. Does that make sense? Like I've seen is that you have those who are, let's say, at least full-time pujaris. You know, I've noticed this. They're full-time pujaris and they have that kind of, you know, humble attitude. There's no social status in their being a full-time pujari. When they have their general duties within the deity room, right? You know, someone's dressing the deity, someone's doing this and that. But all of them, I noticed, if they're done with something or they're doing something that is in connection with someone, some another aspect of the service, they may involve themselves there. Just like, let's say, you today finished dressing the deities early, they may help clean up and make arrangements to set up everything when normally someone else is, you know, more involved in that. Does that make sense? While those who, it's just their function, they come, dress the deities, go away, they may, as soon as they're finished dressing the deities, go away. They won't take anything else. You know. So that's the aspect, is the Daiva Varnashram, it's all about that all these activities, these are all to be engaged in Krishna's service. And so therefore, then on those things are dealing directly, are direct activities of devotional service, then anybody who has that devotional qualification and situation, like we mentioned, you know, initiation, then you can take part in the deity worship and that. The other aspects, you can take part even if not, but you have that faith, and so you surrender to Krishna. So anybody, so you see someone may be giving class or doing different things, but it's not necessarily they have a brahminical conditioning, but they're able to do that because of the devotion. But if they're not devotees, then in Varnashram, they do what is their position. They don't come forward and take part in the big Abhishek, because then if they're not have that brahminical nature and it's not their occupation, they're not doing it. They just come see. And, you know, whatever way they can take part, you know, by observing or giving a donation or maybe putting in some time and effort to help, you know, with some arrangements, they can do those things. But the actual puja and all that will only be done by the Brahmins, that it's their business. So that's the thing of the Daiva Varnashram. Then it's only enough that there has to be someone who's organizing it, someone who's responsible for it, you know, and people who are taking part in the various ways. Can't be that, okay, there's 20 people and we're going to have Janmashtami, so all 21 address Krishna, you know, for his night darshan. No, you can't do that. You know, however many are necessary, they do, and others do other parts. So you still have to have some structure, but it's all centered around Krishna. So then some of the finer details that are necessary for the mundane consciousness don't need to be there for us. Like that. So, yeah. The essential purport of the scriptures is that everyone should always remember Vishnu and never forget him. One who realizes and follows this precept is the knower of all scriptures. Right? So that's what he says. He knows all, has studied all the Vedas, because the point of the Vedas is to understand it's all about remembering Krishna and never forgetting. He understands that, acts on that. That is the result of studying all the Vedas by chanting. All sacrifices, the highest sacrifice is chanting the holy name. So then all sacrifices are included. And all austerity means that you perform your duty. So you see that you are chanting, you are doing those things, you know, in connection with Krishna. That's all austerity. So that's the perfection. You can't say, oh, but I didn't see him do this. But the point is devotion. One, devotion already includes that. And two is that if he's come to this point, you know he's all done all that in previous lifetimes. Anyway, that's for the materialist. That answers for the materialist. Oh, but what about all this? Oh, they've done that in previous lives. That's why they're here. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Because from karma comes bhakti, so therefore they've already done it. So, okay, yes, so they're qualified. No, it's because of bhakti they've come to this position. That has to be said, because otherwise you come to that pinnacle of Brahman, but if you don't move forward into Vaishnava, you will go down and become a Shudra again. That's samsara. Samsara means you get to the top of Brahman, you're going back down to Shudra, and the Shudra, he'll be up at the top of Brahman. Not once I've made it there, I'm eternally there. No. So it keeps going like that. So only devotee getting to that position, then it remains. One who realizes and follows this precept is the knower of all scriptures. He is truly qualified as Brahmana, Sannyasi, or Paramahamsa Abhidhuta. Right? So that's what we're dealing with here, is that the Vaishnava, then he becomes the Brahmana, then he doesn't identify with the Varna aspect of it, that I'm the, you know, that I am the Brahmana and all that, and I'm superior, I'm the guru, I'm all this and that. Then he comes to the point of the Sannyasi. Right? And then, you know, the Paramahamsa, then it's beyond that, where he doesn't even identify with the ashram things, that I'm not any of these things. I'm simply Krishna's servant. Right? And then he does whatever duties, you know, connect with that position. Thus, the principle of taking sannyas may be stated as follows. Taking diksha according to Panchratrika injunctions from a bona fide guru, a person attains the status of dvija, and as a result of practice as a householder, one attains detachment and qualified for Vishnu sannyas and achyuta gotra. When one can give up the marks of the sannyas ashram, one attains the status of paramahamsa. Right, meaning, in other words, like you see, you know, traditionally the saffron cloth, the danda, you know, the position that when he arrives, everyone, you know, has got to, you know, jump and receive and do this or that. He's got to give the class. He's got to lead the kirtan. All these things, that's not the point. When it's just a devotee, then like that, it comes to that. In the same way that a qualified female Vaishnava is allowed to worship the Shaligram, so a qualified female Vaishnava may also take up two pieces of cloth as a brahmachari or renunciate, right? So as it mentioned before, is that all men have a right to enter the Grihastha ashram, but only upper varnas, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahma, have a right to the other three ashramas, Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. So that would mean that women don't have rights to these positions unless there's some connection. Brahmachari, and it means when Grihastha, the husband has the qualification, she can move forward to the Vanaprastha, but she on her own, then the Brahmachari and Sannyas aspects and that is only because of the coming to that position, that Paramahamsa status. Right? Does that make sense? So it's qualified female to worship the Shaligram Srila, but this thing is just I'm second and then automatic. No, it's a matter of there's a mentality here. Because as soon as you have the status and all that, these things, then it becomes a problem. So one has to be very, very careful here, right? Because you're dealing with these things that, no, but anybody can do, but are you looking at it from the opportunity of the service? Are you looking from the status? Because they'll say equal opportunity in service, but no, all what they're meaning is equal opportunity in status. It's not about service. You know, so many times that service can be done. Does that make sense? Yes, no? It's a fine line there, so one has to be very, very careful there. Because otherwise, then one breaks down the thing, and then that higher level of consciousness isn't appreciated. Yes, Pandavji.
Yes, it does make sense. Like, everybody can go on the Brahmachari. I mean, we have 10, 11 buses in Mayapur, so we can have 12 for Matajis also to go around in Bengal and preach and distribute books during the winter. So it's an open opportunity. So many other opportunities are open.
But then they have to have that qualification. You know, so if one's new and all that and one does and nice, but then at some point one must get married, then one moves forward to that. But otherwise you can see as the ones who can, you know, be stable and steady in this, because it's a matter of the stable. Brahman means the stable and steady. So then, you know, the Shaligram worship, so many, they take it up, they get into it, they get fired up about it, and now come back after 5 years. Are they still doing it? Come back after 3 years. Are they still doing it? For some of them, come back after 6 months or 3 months. Are they still doing it? So the ones that are still doing after 5 years, and it's just this normal thing, they're not making a big deal out of it, not trying to take that. And so, yeah, now that's the qualification we're talking about. But just to say, oh, you know, anyone can do, you know, that's not the one has to be careful of that. Okay, so then we'll stop here for today. And then we're saying tomorrow, then no class. Tomorrow and Thursday also, this morning class we're not having, or we're having this morning? Oh. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.